You've downloaded the episode, pulled it up on your iPod pad phone thingy, and you've even pushed play.
Oh man, what did I do? Oh, jeez, is this broken?
There's no going back.
Aww.
Written in his bathroom, Geek Talk Entertainment Thingies Inconceivable. Produced in his basement, Hysterically Accurate News of the World, Wall Steve Journal, and more. Now on the web, everywhere. iTunes, Facebook, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Podomatic. It's time for the Voice of Steve podcast. And now, if the medication is doing what it's supposed to, here's the host of the Voice of Steve podcast. Insert funny name here.
It's the fourth day of the ninth month, the sixth year, the second day of the 21st century. Hi, it's me, Steve, and this is the 255th episode of the Voice of Steve podcast. Hi. How are ya? Hamglish. Yep. It's the 255th episode going on up in her, and that's more episodes of The Voice of Steve than Carter has pills. There are more episodes of The Voice of Steve than all the tea in China. There are more episodes of The Voice of Steve than George Solti has Grammy Awards. And this is a special episode of The Voice of Steve podcast because this weekend we are celebrating the 10th anniversary of the official twins of The Voice of Steve podcast making their way on the scene. That's right. Ramsey and Oliver turn 10 this weekend. We're so excited. We've passed the threshold of single digiters in the house. Now, everyone here is in the double digits, at least chronologically. There might be one of us that's not quite there yet behaviorally. Anyway, enough about me. Happy birthday, Ramsey and Oliver. Your arrival together was the perfect way to cap off this particular family's oil well. You know what I mean? Here's to at least 6 or 7, if not 8 or 9, more decades for you. Love you guys. Well, hey, let's get this week's episode of The Voice of Steve off the ground before the twins age another decade, huh? Entertainment thingies, what the crap, sports, news of the world, Wall Steve Journal, and Geek Talk, all on the way this week. And not necessarily in that particular order. We'll kick things off with the aforementioned entertainment thingies on the Voice of Steve podcast. You know, in case you forgot what you were listening to. Next!
Derby and Grimlock, attorneys at law. The most successful law firm founded by 9-year-old twins.
Derby and Grimlock.
Ramsey and Oliver have a passion for justice. And My Little Ponies. And Transformers.
Derby and Grimlock.
They both decided early on that when they heard about an injustice that needed injusticing, and they were tired of playing, they would grab their Fisher-Price My First Appearance Before the Supreme Court playset and stand up for the little guy.
Derby and Grimlock.
Has someone called you a bad word?
Derby and Grimlock.
Did someone take your toy and claim it was theirs?
Derby and Grimlock.
Your mom and dad making you eat Brussels sprouts before you can have a dessert?
Derby and Grimlock.
Well, you really should do what your mom and dad tell you. Besides, veggies are good for you. For everything else, though, call Derby and Grimlock, attorneys at law.
Derby and Grimlock.
I totally just said that. Anyway, moving on. And the next time you want to tell that one kid who keeps butting in line to go down the slide that your dad is going to sue their dad, it doesn't have to be an empty threat.
Derby and Grimlock.
And because they're 9-year-old twins, they have 18 years of combined experience which can be put to work for you.
Derby and Grimlock.
As long as the neighbor kids aren't home, they haven't played with them in forever. Derpy and Grimlock, attorneys at law, your source for expert legal advice. As long as what you're talking about has something to do with Princess Celestia or the Matrix of Leadership.
Derpy and Grimlock. Grimlock.
At Derpy and Grimlock, attorneys at law,
we don't get paid
because we're minors.
It is time now for entertainment thingies. Aren't you excited? I know I certainly am.
Last week, Entertainment Tonight reported on something we all know you've kind of been dreaming would happen. 66-year-old billionaire and Virgin Group founder Richard Branson survived a terrible bike accident in the British Virgin Islands this week.
I was heading down a hill towards Leverick Bay when it suddenly got all dark and I managed to hit a speed bump in the road head on. The next thing I knew, I was being hurled over the handlebars and my life was literally flashing before my eyes. I really thought I was going to die. I went flying head first toward the concrete road, but fortunately, my shoulder and cheek took the brunt of the impact. I was wearing a helmet that saved my life, and my fleet of high-powered attorneys threatened to sue the road, the speed bump, and the entire British Virgin Islands if anything really nasty happened to me.
According to reports, it was at that exact moment that the road suddenly achieved the consistency of a Sleep Number adjustable mattress set at 35. Though he was cycling with his two adult children at the time of the accident, foul play was ruled out because Holly and Sam are not that stupid, and they know that if Branson had died, everybody would know that they'd set the whole thing up to get him out of the way.
This is a highly sophisticated doo-wacky. If you don't use it responsibly, kablamo!
There are only a few things in this world that truly frighten me. Nuclear Armageddon, the zombie apocalypse, all the ranch dressing being gone at my work's cafeteria, and Kendall Jenner behind the wheel of a motorized vehicle. Well, as you may know, our worst fears were almost realized when it was revealed that Kendall Jenner had been banned from the driving service Uber. According to a source about as reliable as we're likely to get, Kim Kardashian tweeted,
"Ugh, I have to drive at Kendall Jenner around tonight. BC, she's banned from Uber. Why at Uber? She's a model passenger."
Now, Kendall Jenner has the reputation of being one of the few fairly low-key and laid-back members of the Kardashian fam-damily. So, we're not thinking she was banned for being mean to the Uber driver, for picking her up in a car that doesn't cost as much as your average person makes in 6 years. Well, according to Entertainment Tonight, there they are again, they've received a confirmation from an Uber source saying,
"Kendall Jenner has not been banned. No, really. It was a minor account issue that is being resolved. While it's being resolved, her account was put on hold. Uber support has reached out. Really, please don't hurt us."
Okay, so it sounds like things have been worked out and we can all rest easy that Kim Kardashian won't have to be nice to her little sister for too much longer. I feel the worst for Kendall. I mean, with only $300 million to throw around, and only 12 of that belonging to poor Kendall, it's not like she has many transportation options. She's only 20 after all, and don't you have to be 25 and worth $15 million to drive legally in California? I don't think they'd even let her on the bus. Yeah, so get your act together, Uber, and fix that account issue fast. It'd be a national tragedy if she had to call Lyft for a ride instead.
"Are you hep to the job? Can you dig what I'm laying down? I knew that you could slide me some skin, so brother."
It is time now for another edition of
What the Crap?
Well, I don't think I've had a story in the What the Crap segment that deserved to be here more than this story. From the Daily Mail and Yahoo News, via newsoftheweird.com, tourism officials in Iceland recently posted hundreds of signs at visitor attractions with the silhouette of a person squatting with a small pile on the ground underneath, with the familiar circle with a diagonal line through the image indicating don't. Because, apparently, there are quite a few who do. Due to Iceland's chronic shortage of public restrooms. And you know, it's a good thing we have good parents out there making sure their kids know not to just go whizzing everybody. Oh, well, look at this. Spoke too soon. There's a YouTube clip out there somewhere, I'll leave it up to you to find it, of rude Chinese tourists hanging out at Shanghai Disneyland trying to get their kids to go wee-wee in public rather than in the restroom. That just causes you to lose all hope in humanity, doesn't it? Well, hang in there. We have our friends from the Land of the Rising Sun coming to the rescue. The Tourism Bureau of Japan's Hokkaido Island recently overhauled its etiquette guide for visitors to put greater importance and underscore the inappropriateness of belching or flatulence in public. Right. Gotcha.
Huh?
Excuse me.
Did you feel your brain getting damaged?
Tired of trying so hard to be happy, only to have it backfire all over your face? I know, me too. But according to an article from Business Insider, it may be the trying so hard part of being happy that's keeping you from achieving true happiness. Psychologists are increasingly discovering that when it comes to happiness, the paradoxical key to true happiness seems to be accepting unhappiness, not forcing yourself to feel how you don't. One of those psychologists is Susan David, a psychologist at Harvard Medical School and author of the new book, Quit Trying So Hard to Be Happy. Your useless attempts and constant failures are starting to depress us rich, successful, happy people. In the book, Dr. David teaches readers to deal with their emotions in a healthy way so that they're neither hiding them nor letting their feelings control their behavior. And they're also not annoying the people in the penthouse suite with all their whining and complaining.
When we have a particular goal around happiness, what it can lead us to doing is marking every disappointment, every setback, every concern as being proof that we're not happy enough, or almost proof that we failed in our attempt to be happy. And it's just not a realistic way of living.
And there's a growing body of evidence behind this idea. In her book, David cites a study that found people who were asked to read about the benefits of happiness were less happy after watching a happy film than people who simply accepted their meaningless and go-nowhere status in life and had given up on even trying anymore. In fact, the people who were really, truly happy were the people who spray-painted their windows black, pulled their covers over their head, and spent the rest of their lives watching episodes of The Greatest American Hero.
Is this fun? Is this fun the best thing I have?
Please tell me that you, my lucky listener, that you are not one of those people who sit around all day complaining about how old you are. That just drives me nuts. I don't care if you're 50 or 60 or 90, you have nothing to complain about. And here's why. Elizabeth Davis rolls into work as the secretary for Culver Academies, a prep school in Culver, Indiana. You wouldn't think that's very special, and I wouldn't blame you for thinking that. Until I tell you that Elizabeth is 99 years old and has been working for Culver Academy since 1936. Why did the adorable Mrs. Davis apply for the job 8 decades ago? Well, she told ABC News,
I started because a relative of mine was working in admissions under Colonel Henderson, you know, and they needed some help. I had graduated from high school, and I didn't have enough money to go to college.
Mrs. Davis still uses a typewriter and good old-fashioned penmanship to get her work done, and she even has her own little office. Yeah, it's a pretty neat setup. I mean, they lock the doors to her office from the outside, but they let her out every couple hours, you know, to get staff their coffees, and they slide food under the door before they lock up for the night. Well, happy 80th workiversary, Mrs. Davis, and here's to at least 80 more.
We interrupt this program to annoy you and make things generally irritating.
So, a 99-year-old woman spending 80 years at the same job, well, that's pretty impressive. But that is nothing compared to a guy in Indonesia who blows that impressive mark out of the very old water. Mba Gotho from Sragen, Java in Indonesia may just be the oldest living human being in recorded history, clocking in at 146 years old. He has to be spoon-fed and bathed because he's become more frail in recent months, and he spends most of his time listening to the radio because his eyesight is so bad. But it's not really as bad as that all sounds. Mr. Gotho is about as positive as it gets for a guy who's been alive since 1870. Well, until you get to the part where he says that all he wants to do, he says, is die. No, it's on his bucket list, apparently. For proof of his age, we need look no further than a photo of Mr. Gotho's government ID card. The card lists his birth date as December 31st, 1870. Mr. Gotho says he remembers being a small child when the Gondang sugar factory in his hometown opened in 1880. I mean, yeah, you remember that. Now, the secret to his long life? Well, it's not what you'd expect. No, it's not eating French fries every day or smoking 20 packs of smokes every week. According to Mr. Gotho, it's patience and gratitude. Well, sure. If you have to wait 146 years to get to how old you are, you're gonna have to be patient. I'm not sure about the gratitude, though.
Say, thanks to, you know, whoever, for letting me get so old that I can feel the wind blowing 300 miles away and it still gives me windburn. That's a real treat.
Well, I'd wish you another 146 years, Mr. Gotho, but I've never been that cruel. Whenever God calls you home, you've earned whatever paradise is waiting for you.
You gotta grab life by the lips and yank as hard as you can.
Throughout human history, mankind has looked for answers. Who are we? What is the universe? Why is Velveeta shells and cheese so much better than regular macaroni and cheese? Science has been one of the tools used to search for those answers. And Steve is a tool who wouldn't understand science if Mr. Spock bit him in the brain. But I suppose he's going to talk about science stuff anyway, isn't he? Yep, he's gonna do it. So, I guess, here's Dr. Steve, Scientifical Guy.
Now, Mrs. Davis and Mr. Gothos, those two punks can just have a seat over there because they are mere pups compared to what we're talking about next. According to the journal Science and reported on TheVerge.com, researchers led by University of Copenhagen marine biologist Jan Stephensen have developed a technique to help determine the age of the Greenland, or gurry, or gray shark that can live to be up to 400 years old. Why, it can't remember its name. Stephensen and his gang of Copenhagians have discovered that those sharks grow about 1 centimeter per year. Now, with the average Greenland shark growing to a size of about 5 meters, well, you do the math. Well, no, I'm not going to do it. Fine. The good news is the happy shark people did the math for us. That's about a meter every 100 years. A 5 meter shark would be about 500 years old. Now, these guys have also used the unusual method of testing Greenland sharks for bomb pulses of carbon-14. You know, carbon-14, a heavy isotope left behind by nuclear bomb testing in the 1950s. Hey, don't tell me Mr. Stroman never told you about carbon-14 during social studies back in 10th grade. Anyway, they could tell how old a shark was by how many times it got whammied by a nuke test. I think we're going down a Godzilla-sized rabbit hole there, guys. Now, some of Mr. Stephensen's colleagues thought it was pretty cool, though.
Who would have expected that nuclear bombs one day could help to determine the lifespan of marine sharks?
Probably someone who hasn't seen all of the Godzilla movies 47 times. Bottom line, by correlating radiocarbon dates with shark lengths, and asking the sharks if they were around to watch the first episode of 60 Minutes, the research team discovered one particularly aged shark was 392 years old, give or take 120 years. So, with the margin of error, this thing could be 512 years old. Or it could be 272 years old. It is, though, the only known shark to live off those little containers of Jell-O, like the ones you put in your kids' lunches, and who also wears blue plaid pants. Get off our ocean!
You're really enjoying this, aren't you, you sick bastard?
All right, it's another week, and that means the scientists, who are too self-conscious to investigate stuff actually happening on Earth, have discovered yet another Earth-like planet. Starting back in 2009, instead of using their amazing intelligence to solve world hunger or cure diseases, a bunch of NASA scientists started the Kepler mission. According to the official Kepler website, which, when I visited it, doubled its number of visits, the Kepler mission is a mission specifically designed to survey a portion of our region of the Milky Way galaxy to discover dozens of Earth-sized planets in or near the habitable zone and determine how many of the billions of stars in our galaxy have such planets. Since its mission began, over 4,000 exoplanets have been discovered, several hundred of which have been confirmed to be Earth-like. And of those, some 216 planets have been shown to be both terrestrial and located within their parent star's habitable or Goldilocks zone. Problem is, the planets found so far have been so far away, we wouldn't be able to reach them, even in your dad's sweet new Tesla. But now, according to the German weekly Der Spiegel, astronomers have discovered an Earth-like planet orbiting Proxima Centauri, just 4.25 light years away. So, here we've got a planet that's Earth-like, orbits within its sun's Goldilocks zone, and is within our reach, even in your stepdad's not-so-sweet 1987 Plymouth Horizon. Start packing your Tang, astronauts. We're gonna get you to that Proxima Centauri planet, even if we have to launch you from a giant slingshot.
I wonder if there really is life on other planets.
What do you care? You don't have a life on this planet.
And now, covering sports ESPN is afraid to touch, and NBC Sports Network can't afford the rights to. It's time for Voice of Steve Sports. Camel wrestling, cheese rolling, bog snorkeling, chess boxing, extreme ironing. Now, let's go to the Voice of Steve Sports desk and your Voice of Steve Sports anchor, the Voice of Steve.
I know I don't follow professional soccer as much as most, but it's all I can do to keep track of the rules for the soccer that my daughters play. And don't even get me started on soccer's goofy offsides. I won't understand it even if you explain it to me every day for a million years. That is not a challenge. One thing I do understand, though, is a sore loser and someone who thinks they're more important than the rest of the team. Women's U.S. Olympic soccer team goalie Hope Solo is just that sort of person. After losing to Sweden in a shootout and being eliminated from the Olympic tournament, Hope Solo decided to take the low ground and call the Swedish team cowards, saying they didn't play the way she thought they should have played.
They didn't want to pass the ball. They didn't want to press. They didn't want to open the game. They didn't want to do things that would have helped us win the game, like passing the ball right to our offense and then letting us score goals. It's like they had some kind of game plan out there, like they were trying to win and stuff. And that's just not cool. Pretty cowardly-ish.
You are totally shameless. You need your own line of greeting cards.
Well, here it is, the start of yet another football season, and we all know what that means. It's just about time for another Tony Romo injury. We were spoiled last season with a broken left collarbone to go along with his fractured left clavicle and bad shoulder, to say nothing of the screwed up back he's dealt with for the last several seasons. This year, I was hoping for a fractured eye socket or maybe a blown out kneecap. And if it went down by week 6 or 7, yeah, that'd be okay. Never in my wildest dreams did I think we'd get our Christmas present before September. Week 3 of preseason saw Tony Romo go down thanks to a sack by Seattle Seahawks Cliff Averill, and Romo did not get back up. Because Cowboys coach Jason Garrett knows he's dealing with a box full of fragile dinnerware being transported in a truck with bad shocks, when he's dealing with him, Romo was pulled from the game. Friday morning, when Romo wasn't feeling better, in fact, his back had stiffened quite a bit, Romo was taken in for an MRI where it was discovered he'd broken a bone in his back. The good news for the Cowboys is that their current number one backup to Romo, rookie QB Dak Prescott out of Mississippi State and apparently part of Rogue Squadron, is currently creating a ton of buzz with his preseason performance thus far, according to Yahoo Sports blogger Shaliz Manza-Young, completing 39 passes out of 50 for 454 yards, 5 touchdowns and no picks, including a perfect 158.3 passer rating against the Miami Dolphins last week. And while this won't make Tony Romo feel any better, we can't forget the 2 rushing touchdowns Prescott scored against Miami. I think it's time for Romo to practice that fake smile he'll be using, as it looks like he'll be signing autographs for $5 a piece at the opening of Cletus's Stop and Shop and Slop any day now.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit drinking.
Voice of Steve. News of the world.
You may have heard in the news the last couple of days that North Korea let off quite the firecracker recently. Yep, just as President Obama was making his way home to Washington after his Far East tour, our funny young friend Kim Jong-un set off a miniaturized nuclear warhead. There was an official statement from the U.S. State Department and the White House, but frankly, the translated official statement from the North Korean Workers' Party of Korea is much funnier.
The scientists and technicians of the DPRK carried out a nuclear explosion test for the judgment of the power of a nuclear warhead newly studied and manufactured by them at the Northern Nuclear Test Ground under the plan of the Workers' Party of Korea for building strategic nuclear force. The Central Committee of the WPK sent warm congratulations to nuclear scientists and technicians of the Northern Nuclear Test Ground on the successful nuclear warhead explosion test.
Well, before all that went down, or did it go up, a couple other things went up. First, according to QZ.com, your home for news when you randomly click on a Google search result, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un orchestrated a test of its submarine-launched ballistic missiles in what appeared to be a warning to Washington and to Seoul, South Korea, not to invade. Are we planning on invading? Then, to celebrate the missile launch and other recent triumphs of military prowess and technology, like figuring out how to pin medals on soldiers without stabbing them in the heart, North Korea declared August 26th a Sungun holiday. The term means military first in English and is derived from a policy instituted by Kim Jong-il in the 1960s that prioritized the military when it came to making national economic decisions and allocating funding. The policy led to the creation of the country's 1.2 million strong army and ordinary citizens finally being able to use their refrigerators as bookshelves because they had no food to put in them. During the festivities this past week, citizens took to the streets to celebrate with a series of mass dancing events and live outdoor concerts that lasted about 5 minutes until the performers passed out due to malnutrition.
Oh, yes! I hate this! It is revolting!
Next, because, let's be real, all the real fun stuff is happening in North Korea these days. Hey, gotta step it up, Papua New Guinea and Djibouti. Here's a story from the New York Post about our fanatically funny friends in the DPKR. North Korea, baby! Woo! We go to the New York Post for the story of Brigham Young student David Sneddon, who was reported missing during a China hiking trip back in 2004. The Chinese authorities, eager to catch the series finale of Friends, concluded that Mr. Sneddon was likely the victim of a hiking accident. There was only one problem. They never found the body of Mr. Sneddon, who spoke, coincidentally, fluent Korean. The reason they never found Mr. Sneddon's body was because Mr. Sneddon's body was walking around North Korea, teaching English to Kim Jong-un, who was 20 at the time. You see, North Korea doesn't work the same way we do. When you need something, like sliced cheese, you simply go to the store and buy it. When North Korea needs something, like an English tutor for their glorious leader Kim Jong-il's kooky son, well, they don't call the local tutor place. They kidnap a foreign national serving on a Mormon mission in South Korea where his language skills became known. Simple as that. Can't be easier. And now Kim Jong-un's English, not to mention his knowledge of American culture, is considered excellent. And young Mr. Sneddon has been found living in North Korea, working, oddly enough, as a school teacher, and is reportedly married, has two children, and is typically threatened with death twice a day if he were to even think of trying to escape. No word on whether Mr. Sneddon participated in the post-missile launch festivities last month, though he probably did, since the getting down and boogie was pretty much mandatory.
You belong in the circus, right next to the dog-faced boy.
I need more money.
He's the world's foremost expert on the world's foremost experts. Money makes the world go round.
So it's made of gravity then?
He knows the American dollar to Ferengi Gold Press Latinum exchange rate.
Penny wise and pound foolish. Are you saying I'm fat?
He petitioned the Dow Jones Industrials to use Godzilla's roar for their session's opening bell.
Put your money where your mouth is. Yeah, but how many points is that?
And now he's going to deliver the financial news.
We're going to talk about the Angelina Jolie stock index, right? Right?
Oh, this is embarrassing. Here is the Wall Steve Journal.
It wasn't all that long ago that Apple could do no wrong, and its books backed that up. Well, now it looks like those microchips Apple had implanted in us the last time we went to the doctor's office have broken or lost power or something, because it seems like we're starting to wake from the Apple fog. A few weeks ago, Apple CEO Tim Cook announced in an interview with an Irish media outlet that Apple would be repatriating billions of dollars in cash right on back to the good old US of A. The comments come suspiciously soon after the European Commission said Apple needed to pay Ireland $14.5 billion in tax penalties. That was a demand that Cook called total political crap. In what I call total what the heck are you thinking crap, Apple revealed the new iPhone 7 and 7 Plus this past week. Lots of super cool improvements in the 7 Plus. A dual camera, so you can take pictures of things twice at the same time? I don't know. A new color, yeah, to add to the white and black. Now you can choose jet black, even though that's just regular black, like with dirt on it or something. More storage in the phone so you won't run out of room as quickly after taking 742 pictures of the cow crossing the road. Never seen that before. The new iPhone 7 is going to be water resistant as well, which means it'll still get wrecked when you drop it in the toilet. And no, rice still won't dry it out and fix it. But the biggest and most controversial move Apple's making with its iPhone 7 and 7 Plus, it's moving out the headphone jack. Well, I guess that's okay. I mean, there's only so many other ways a company can jack the consumer around. And this time, Apple's doing it by making your current earbuds obsolete, by making you have to spend an additional $150 on wireless earbuds that you're either going to break or lose within 2 weeks of getting them. And they're doing it while telling you they removed the headphone jack to make room for more stuff in the phone. What stuff? A deck of playing cards? My collection of used bandages? Listen, Apple, unless you're making room for a time travel chip in the phone, leave my freaking headphone earbud jack alone. Jeez.
I'm gonna hit you with something really heavy. What are you doing?
Too big to fail my fanny. Check this out. I'm pulling this from the USA Today via Care11 News' Care11.com. Giganto Uber Ginormundo Bank, Wells Fargo, was slammed with a $185 million civil penalty for secretly opening millions, I said millions, of unauthorized deposit and credit card accounts that harmed customers, according to federal and state officials. You know, I have to point out, I've always wanted to say that.
According to federal and state officials.
I've seen them do it on the news shows all the time, but never in the almost 7 years I've been doing this have I had the chance. That was fun. Annie, where's all my money? I'm just hoping this wasn't a widespread and common practice accepted by those in leadership within the Wells Fargo organization. Aw, cripes. Will you look at this? In addition to the huge fines, Wells Fargo has said it fired about 5,300 employees and managers over this. Wait, what the huh? 5,300? Is that the same thing as 5,300? Because if it is, that's redonkulous. According to Wells Fargo, the firings
reflect our commitment to monitoring and addressing any inappropriate sales conduct.
Actually, I think we need to run that quote through the DBSinator real quick. Okay, that's done. Want to spit that quote out one more time?
The firings reflect our realization that we got busted big time, and they are our lame attempt at making it look like we A, care, B, give a rat's ass, and C, like we have anywhere in our collective being a molecule of concern for those who were affected. Keep in mind, we knew this was going on and did nothing till we got caught.
Now you see that evil will always triumph. Because good is dumb.
It is time now for Geek Talk, which is Klingon for Chess is Not a Sport.
Finally, something positive to talk about when it comes to the DC Extended Universe. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal via Newsarama.com, popular creator and co-head of DC Films Geoff Johns has laid out his vision of the future of DC's movie universe. A future he says will be more hopeful and optimistic. Which is super great, because my insurance wasn't going to cover much more of my therapy.
Mistakenly in the past, I think the studio has said, oh, DC films are gritty and dark. And that's what makes them different. That couldn't be more wrong. It's a hopeful and optimistic view of life. Well, even Batman has the glimmer of that in him.
Right. We were seeing Batman be optimistic that putting a tow line on that car and flipping it 7 times was going to kill the guys in it. And he hoped that he didn't use up all of his Batplane's bullets doing the Swiss cheese number on those other guys. Johns and his co-head John Berg worked closely with Justice League director Zack Snyder and screenwriter Chris Terrio to make the film closer to their vision of the DC Universe. Well, seriously, I'm glad they're being transparent about the change in vision for the DC EU. Nothing wrong with a character like Batman being all grr and stuff, but you need characters like Flash and Superman and others, and the upbeat sense of hope that they bring to counterbalance that. I just hope that they don't take it to the other extreme, where we see Batman trying to rehydrate all the members of the World Council. That would be pushing it.
Man, I'm tired of being right.
All right, thought I'd wrap things up here with a thud of a reveal. For about a week or so, Marvel was putting out a thing that just had MU on it. The letters MU. After I came to understand it wasn't Marvel's cute way of saying F-U, I had to admit I had no idea what the big announcement was going to be. Then they started dropping artist names like Linil Yu, Steve McNiven, Adam Kubert, Salvador LaRocca and Greg Land. Adding those artists to the MU book just guaranteed the third book will be late before the first one is even out. But what is MU? What does it mean? What does it stand for? Well, according to ScreenRant.com, it means... Ready? Are you sitting down? Doesn't matter. You can stand. Doesn't matter. Monsters Unleashed. See, there was no chance of you falling over. You hear that sound, though? Do you want to know what that sound is? It's the sound of a million comic book nerds crying out,
"What the?"
Then suddenly being silenced. My left big toe could come up with a better, more entertaining story than Monsters Unleashed. Unfortunately, my left big toe is out of town on business, and my right big toe stopped reading Marvel Comics years ago, so we're good for a pass on this one.
They're crap. 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 Mega crap.
Well, there you have it, folks. Another happy ending from the good people at Jimmy James Incorporated.
I can't let this episode end without talking about what's on everybody's mind this weekend. As of Sunday, it's been 15 years since the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. 3,000 souls were lost 15 years ago in the worst act of terrorism the world has ever seen. And you know what? 15 years ago on September 12th, I was convinced that we as a country, as a people, as a society, would be able to push back against the people who so cowardly attacked all those innocent people. I hate to say it, but 15 years later, I'm not so confident. Instead of united, we are more divided now than we've ever been. What happened to that sense of unity we all felt after the attacks? Today, we're faced with an arguably even greater threat in the form of attacks like those in Paris, San Bernardino, Miami, Nice, and others. But instead of uniting us, these attacks are doing what I think the terrorists and Islamic radicals want these attacks to do. They continue to divide us. As we debate how to respond to these people, or if we even should, they continue to plot and plan and move and advance. I'm not a military or political genius, nor am I necessarily a master of common sense. But when you are confronted with a threat, you've just got to take those steps to protect yourself and those you love. If we love our country, and in any way want to preserve our way of life, we have to unite like we did in 2001. The longer we take to debate and argue and try to be more right than the other person, the easier it will be for the radical Muslims to destroy us simply for not being what they want us to be. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Voice of Steve podcast. Thanks for joining me. Hey, do me a favor and let me know you exist. It's so easy. Just send me an email telling me what you think about the Voice of Steve. TheVoiceOfSteve@yahoo.com is the email address. You can join me on Facebook, facebook.com/voiceofsteve. Twitter even, @TheVOSShow. And I want to hear from you. I want to find out what you're thinking. Something you want me to talk about? Something weird or funny going on in the world you think I can make weirder or funnier? Let's give it a whirl. Hey, also, remember, I have some crowdfunding deals going on right now. Visit GoFundMe.com/TheVoiceOfSteve to help me there, or head on over to Patreon.com/TheVoiceOfSteve podcast. Either way, if you contribute, you'll be helping me get closer to achieving my goal, my dream, of using my God-given voice talents to build a career in voiceover and better provide for my family. I had a blast this week, and I hope you did too. I hope to be back next week, but whenever our paths cross next, I know it'll be fun. Have a great week. Bye.